Welcome to the Grueling Truths NFL Legends Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo. Gridiron Mo is an interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have called also. So check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. I am Mike Goodpaster, your host for the Legends Show, and I want to welcome in my co-host, Matt Andrews-Cavage.
Thanks very much, Mike. Always glad to be here.
Well, got another great guest tonight. Played, I think, close to a decade in the NFL with the San Diego Chargers, Los Angeles Rams, and the Green Bay Packers. Help me welcome to the Grueling Truth Legends Show, Buford McGee.
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, we're doing great, Buford.
All right, Mac and Mike, right? Yeah, I'm doing great.
All right, so let's just start high school career. You started out as an All-State quarterback, which a lot of people probably don't know about you. Were you disappointed to go to college and not get a chance to play quarterback?
No, at the time, I wasn't disappointed, but, you know, it was just a part of the deal. Back in those days, you know, there really wasn't that many black quarterbacks, really, and I accepted that I was going to be a running back. And you know, I just wanted to be a team player, and I felt my best chance was would really be a running back also. So I wasn't really a throwing quarterback. I could throw, but I was more of a runner than a thrower. So that's how that happened.
Take us back to your freshman season at Ole Miss. You know, your first carry is a 50-yard touchdown run in a game that you run over 150 yards. I think you guys won like 38-35. What do you remember about your first college game?
Well, I remember I was scared. Number one, I'm from a little small town in Durham, Mississippi. We only had like 13 or 14 players on my team. But we always played in before Pack's house. I had never lost. I mean, the group I started out with, we never lost in Pee Wee. We never lost in junior high. We never lost in high school either. So our high school record was like 33-0, so we never lost. But it was a lot of hype about me, like you said, at the time. I was number one player in the state coming out. And I remember we had John Forkay, he played with the Saints for a little while. He was a quarterback there. And I just remember him pitching it to me. And, I mean, I had earned my stripes, you know. When people hype you up, they expect a lot out of you. So, yeah, you can either show up or be scared of the lights, as they said, deer in the headlights. So I think I knew I had the talent. I was never afraid, so I remember just running hard, and I was scared. So, and my first, and that's what everyone talks about and remembering about, you know, at Ole Miss. It's the first time I touched the ball. I went 52 yards by touchdown. It was a great feeling.
Now, your senior season, you played in a game that is probably the most amazing finish in college football history. I know Matt's a little bit younger, so he may not know this, but you ought to look up the 1983, what did they call it, the Immaculate Deflection?
Yes.
Go ahead and kind of explain the game, the situation, and how the game ended.
Well, you know, every year we played Mississippi State the last game of the year. Back then, we didn't play on campus. We played two games on campus at Ole Miss, but the state wasn't as big as it is now. So most of the time we went to Jackson, and we played our rival, who was Mississippi State Bulldogs. And at this time, it was like, I mean, they were going for a winning field goal, actually, and somehow the ball was kicked, and it looked like it was going through the uprights, hit it right forward, but it was like the God came out of nowhere and just blew the ball back before it went through the goalpost, and we were able to win that game and go and play the Independence Bowl against Air Force. So that was unbelievable. It was unbelievable to see. I don't know how it happened. But when the win happened at that right time, it was a great feeling for us and our seniors. Yeah, so they truly had won the game. It was a very short field goal, but the gust of wind came out of nowhere and blew it back.
Yeah, Matt, if you haven't seen this, you need to check it out though.
This one I've never seen before.
The ball is going through the middle of the uprights. It gets about a yard from going between the uprights, and this big gust of wind comes in and blows the ball about 20 yards to the left.
It did. That's
amazing.
It is.
You got to figure, if you're going to Mississippi State, you know, you're probably going to hell because God don't like you.
I could probably go through my mind.
On YouTube. Just put in like 1983 Egg Bowl or the Immaculate. I think they call it the Immaculate Deflection.
Yes, that's what they call it. Yeah,
yeah,
they
definitely. Everybody needs to check that out.
Yes, it was.
That's outstanding.
They talk about that a lot too in Mississippi. I try to go to one game a year down there at Ole Miss. They're really doing good down there. They really are.
Yeah, and the thing is, they were down. You guys were down like 23-7 in that game too in the second half, weren't you?
Yes, absolutely. We came back and made a run for it. Basically, for the seniors, you know, and the first year that we had Steve Sloan, the coach before that, then we had Coach Brewer. It was his first year, so we were able to, you know, it was good for seniors going out, you know, to go out on winning those against Mississippi State. It's called the Egg Bowl, and every year, you know, they present this big trophy with an egg on it. So Ole Miss has it now. That's, of course, we beat Mississippi State last year. So every year, that whoever wins the game, they take control of the Egg Bowl, the Egg Trophy.
Well, what were your feelings on, you leave college and you're getting ready to go in the NFL, and what were your feelings on being drafted by the Chargers in 1984?
Well, believe it or not, I had my roommate at the time, his name was Andre Townsend. He went and played for the Broncos for 7-8 years. And he had got drafted in the second round, and we were living off campus at the time. And he had already left and went to Denver and got there and called me and stuff, and I ain't got drafted. So, I mean, the Cowboys, a couple other people were around that was thinking about taking me as a free agent, so they were in town. I knew that. But so it was about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, the phone rung, and it was the San Diego Chargers. The guy on the phone, he played for the Chargers back in the day. His name was Tate the Younger, you know. So, I mean, that's who gave me the news that I had been drafted by the Chargers in the 11th round. You believe it? They had 12 rounds back in those days. They had Mr. Reverend, you know, the last person drafted in the 12th round back. They always had a 4A for him, of course, back in those days. These days, they only have 7 rounds, but I was very enthused that all I wanted was opportunity, and I got that. And what happened was that I got there, and there was a lot of things that I could do that, you know, that I could bring to the game that I was doing in college.
So I could catch the ball, I could block, and I could run. So that's what they need, someone very versatile like that. So that's, I was very enthusiastic, really, to even get an opportunity to play. I know it would be fun because back then the Chargers was not one offense around. So it was really exciting. I was really excited. And being a kid from Mississippi, and, you know, and everything was black and white in my world. I never seen anything else but black and white for racial stuff. And to land in San Diego, and, you know, and how beautiful San Diego was, and, of course, there with the Marines there and everything else there, so all races were there. So it was quite an experience for a kid from Mississippi. All right, you get to the Chargers, and you've got Don Coryell, one of the great offensive minds in NFL history. What kind of coach was Don Coryell like to play for? Oh man, he was fantastic. You know, all I ever know. I mean, when you see him on the sidelines, of course, you think he's a real mean person because he never smiled. He always had a smile on his face. You know, so but that's the look you gave. But he was very sincere. He was a great mind. You know. Back in the day, San Diego was always known from Fig Gibbon, you know, to Don Coryell. Of course, you know, when you talk about the West Coast offense, most people think of, the coach was at 49ers, you know, they think of him, Bill Walsh, most of the time. But you got to think about it. Before all this happened, Bill Walsh was a coach with the San Diego Chargers under Don Coryell. So was Jake Gills was the coach underneath him. He ran the same type of offense, but he was a little more of a, like a tight end instead. So all this stuff came from Coryell. Of course, Dan Peter went on with the Rams and all, you know, with the coach, in Green Bay that I was there with. He was in San Francisco before that.
Mike Holmgren,
all those guys. You know, you think about all those guys that was there, you know, Chucky, you know, all those guys, Ray Rose, you know, Steve Mariucci, you know, all those coaches was there. And, of course, you know, that all came from Don Coryell. That's what the West Coast offense, that came through him. So he's the originator of it. I mean, he was a very, very intelligent man, very smart. And, I had the story. So my rookie year, you know, they voted me rookie. The players voted me rookie of the year, so I was very excited about that. So I guess I didn't know, so I went back to Mississippi, and I came back, and I wasn't really in good shape. And and we were running some sprints and doing camp, I pulled a hamstring, and Coyier came over to me, and he had a little lift in his voice, you know, when he talked, you know, and he said, Pizza McGee, you know, I'll just put you back on the bus and send you back to Mississippi. That's what he told me. From then on, I knew that it was a business, and he meant business. And even though I had, you know, had a great year, I didn't do what I was supposed to in the offseason and come back in shape. And that's my story about Coach Coyier. He's a great innovator of the West Coast offense, no doubt. Good, brilliant mind.
Well, Don Coryell certainly has a lot of influence on modern offense. And what was it like for you to be in the huddle with guys like Dan Fouts, Kellen Winslow, and I think Charlie Joyner might have even still been there.
Yeah, Wes Chandler.
Wes Chandler, absolutely.
Yeah.
What was it like to play with those guys?
Well, to be honest with you, it was like you couldn't have feel when you're a rookie, but you could see these guys, you know how serious they were about practice, and what Dan was a real serious person. And at the time, we had, some guys that got drafted in front of me, like Lil Train James and some more guys, you know, on the depth chart. So I was really down there. And they had this linebacker named Billy Ray Smith, who was a first round for the Chargers from Arkansas. So I was always a scout team linebacker. You know, when you bottom of the totem pole, they put you on scout team, and you run the other team offense. So, and Billy Ray Smith used to blitz all the time, and I would go in there and tattoo him, and I would just light him up. me and him got in a couple of fights and stuff. So Dan Fouts at his time, and he had probably 16, 17 years, he couldn't really move around and get around that much. And one day they came out on the field. He said, "Where's that McGee kid? I want him in here." So I knew that he knew I could block and protect him. So that's he wanted in there. And during the meetings, Ernest and people would ask me, "Buford, what's your job?" I say, "Well, my job is to check this and, you know, run around and do all this, run the ball." He said, "No. Your job is just to block. That's all I want you to do. I don't want you to think about anything else." So that's how I made the team, basically just blocking for Dan Fouts. And, it's so surreal when you see guys like, Kevin Winslow at the time, you know, he's big, 6'5", 260, running real good. And you see, you know, Charlie Joyner had been there 19 or 20 years playing. And, you know, Wes Chandler, man, what an athlete he was. And Winslow and those guys, they were just brilliant. And of course, they had great Chuck Muncy at the time. Now, he's big too. He's like 6'4", you know, 200 some pounds. And just to see it work, it wasn't about it. Back today's now, Dan Fouts was such a ahead of the game. And they would always throw to a spot. You know, he would throw the ball before the defense back, but even the receiver would break out his route. The ball was already there when he turned around. So it was all about time and system throwing to a spot. And he was the best at it. I mean, they absolutely the best at it. Today they do a lot of checking off on the line and stuff. I mean, we did a couple of things like that, you know, two or three plays, but not as much they do now. But I tell you what, he was really smart, and those guys were really talented, and they worked hard in practice. So they kind of show you what it's like to be a pro, you know. And you're going to be a part of that offense, you had to be really smart, because if you weren't smart enough to, you know, pick up the block, they weren't going to put you on the field because you get that hurt, of course. So,
The first time I really remember recognizing you as an NFL player would have been a game you guys played your rookie season, 1984. You played the Dolphins, who were 11-0 in San Diego.
Yeah.
You guys beat them. I think you scored the game-winning touchdown in overtime. You want to talk
in overtime. Yeah, that was a great situation. It was a game that we were really looking forward to, because at the time it was I had just it was my rookie year. I went to it would be Dan Marino's first year. I went to see San Francisco and Miami playing the Super Bowl up in San Francisco. Now it was Palo Alto. That's what it was. It was in Palo Alto that year. So I was on the All-America team with Dan Marino and Eric Dickerson and Tony Hunter, all these guys that you had met before, you know, but they were so great. I mean, at this point in time, these guys were legends. And we were really hyped about the game because, you know, Dan and both Dan, you know, I think we'll always say with Dan South will be, you know, we said Book and Dano, you know, like Hawaii 5-0. So that was our thing we always say to him. But it was a brilliant game with two passing teams that could really light up the scoreboard. And it came really down to, I wasn't supposed to be in there on that play, really. Ernest Jackson was supposed to come in there. So we kind of got down to the clock and they called the play. It's just basically, I remember the play, it was an 80 log was the play. And I ran like 25 yards for a touchdown, and that was a great feeling, you know, to do that. They trust me enough to lead me in the game and do that as a rookie.
How'd you feel, you know, what happened, the way I want to put it is, there's a lot of mixed feelings for a player when he gets traded. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. it's good, sometimes it's not so good. What was it like for you getting traded to the Rams?
Well, it was, number one, it was a brilliant thing because, I mean, I didn't want to leave San Diego. I love San Diego, you know. I love the offense. And of course, I think Coach Saunders that took over there, got rid of Coach Coyle that year. And during the minicamps and stuff, I would always be in draft up there. And now I realize what he was doing. I had kind of hurt my knee, so I was coming back off the field. And so I guess he's checking me out, see how I was running and playing. So and I didn't know what was really going on until probably a couple weeks later he told me that I had been traded to the Rams for Barry Redden, of course, who he wanted to get away from behind Eric Dixon instead of blocking for him. He thought he was a tailback, so Barry Redden came to San Diego, and I went up to the Rams. And at the time, I didn't know what I wanted to be, but I knew they ran the ball a lot. But the good thing about it, I trusted Zamp Heath, and he trusted me to bring me along with him to help people learn the offense. And when we got up there, we knew Eric could really run the ball, but the brilliant surprise and all of that was how good Henry Ellen really was. You know, I thought West Chandler was a great athlete, but once I got a chance to see Henry Ellen, it was like, oh my God, you know, he was really good. And of course, you know, Jackie Slater, you know, he's from Mississippi too, and he was playing his 20 years, you know, and had all these guys that were good. I mean, Charles White was there, you know, he had won the Heisman Trophy. Of course, Eric Dickerson, you know, all these people, Jerry Gray, you know, all these Leroy Irvin, all these guys that you've seen, heard about, all these all-pro guys. And of course, the legendary, you know, John Robinson, who had, you know, he had Charles White, Heisman Trophy winner, he had Marcus Allen, you know, and then, of course, he had Eric Dixon there. So, you know that he really knew what he was talking about when it came to coaching running backs. And so I was excited about that part, to learn different angles about the running game. And I learned a whole lot from him. And we kind of put that together. But unfortunately, we went on strike that year, and it was 1987. We went on strike. So after that, we came back on a, I think we played like a Monday night game. We played the first game against Cleveland, and that was right before Halloween, and that was Eric Dixon's last game, and they traded him to Indianapolis, of course. So, I really think and believe that if Eric would have stayed in Los Angeles, man, I think no one ever broke his record, you know, with that line they had and Coach Robinson when he coached, and they ran that 47 gap play, you know. It was just unreal, you know. I think he could put that record way out there if he was stayed.
Matt, you talked a little bit about Eric Dickerson, his last game against Cleveland, Monday night game, 1987, entered a strike. What did that do to the team when they traded Dickerson? What kind of effect did it have on the rest of that season?
Well, it was a hard year because, first of all, you know, we came in to play four games, you know, we were on strike, and it was a lot of animosity between players because, you know, some players had to cross the line to go play, you know. And, you know, some of them chose to go play and some of us chose to stay. So the locker room really never got together, you know, I could say, because there's a lot of animosity. You know, when you come back, people cross the line and you mix all that together. Some people have hard feelings about it, you know.
But, I mean, I didn't have any hard feelings about anyone because I didn't know what the other person's situation was with his family, you know, and the money situation. So I think a man has to do what he has to do, you know, during that year in 1987. But it was a very hard year. It was for shape, concern, wasn't in the best shape, you know. It was just I call it a wasted year, really. And you know, with Eric being gone, that made it even worse. Because, you know, I was really looking forward to, you know, playing and blocking for him and, you know, seeing him run. But you really know it's a business when you see stuff like that happen. You know, that's my first time really like, man, they paid Eric Dixon. You know, just think what they think about a little person like me, you know. And then, of course, you see all stuff happening these days. But back then, that's when it really hit me in the face with the Eric Dixon stuff. And I wish we could have played more games with him, but it was, like I said, I think it was a wasted year because it was 1987, the strike year, and they had the, you know, the scab games and just so that, you know, the league could collect money on the TV contracts and stuff. So it's a painful year for me to remember. I try not to remember that much about that year.
Well, you mentioned 1987 being a wasted year and definitely a rough year for the Rams franchise. But, you know, you get to, and by the time 1989 shows up, You know, the offensive unit is very strong. You mentioned Henry Ellard. You got Flipper Anderson, Pete Callahan. Greg Bell at running back.
Yeah, Greg and Robert Delphine and all these guys. You know, I was very fortunate in my career. I mean, when I was like 1984, I think we went up to play Seattle at the time. And I just go blank when I remember people's names. What was the wide receiver that was so good up there during this time? He was a senator or a legislator. I can't think of his name. Help me out, guys. Yeah, I don't remember him either. He was a wide receiver, white guy. He was really good. But anyway,
Steve Largent.
Steve Largent, there you go. So Steve Largent, I was there at the time that, you know, he had the receiving record at that time, you know, the most receiving yards, okay? And then when we played them, Charlie Joyner broke his record in Seattle, you know, broke his receiving record. So I was able to see that. And then when we went to San Diego, we played Kansas City, and Stephon Page had the most receiving yards against us. I was there to see that. And then after that, of course, Flipper Anderson had that great game against New Orleans. And I was there to witness that, and his record still stands for the most, you know, yards. And so I've seen a lot in my lifetime. And, I mean, being in the NFL, being in the right place at the right time. And the unfortunate thing that I was there for was the Rams, we played Detroit and Utley, they got paralyzed. And we played against the Rams, and they got paralyzed. That game, so it's been, you know, it's a lot you see doing, you know, if you're doing a career, and you know that you know, little kids from Mississippi thought we'd ever be able to see, but to see these guys go out and work and do what they do professionally, it's a humbling feeling to be able to, you know, even be on the same field with them, really. And then with Ully, that brings back, you know, a situation that you know how dangerous football really is, you know, so. And very lucky to play, you know, one game, not only all the games. So it's a very difficult, it's a very rough sport. And so it brings it all back to which. Go ahead.
So the, you know, the 1989, you guys get to the wild card game, I believe, against the Eagles. And I believe you were the one that threw the block that sprung Greg Bell for what would have been a winning play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about that game for us.
Well, really, they were really good, you know, at the time. I was talking about a little earlier that that year we had to beat New England. We was up in New England, and it was real cold and snowing and all that good stuff. Up from being in L.A., it was a situation that we didn't really like. But we had to play, so we need to win that game, and we need someone else to lose. But anyway, somehow we won the game. And then we flew back to L.A., and then next we had Philadelphia. I mean, you know, you're talking about Reggie White, Seth Jordan, you know, Clyde Simmons, and Jerome Brown. I mean, I don't know. They were really
something to beat with Cunningham and all those guys. I mean, they were really a good team, and we went there and we beat them. And so, and then we're like, oh my God! So we fly all the way back to L.A. And then next game we go to meet the Giants, and of course that was a real tough game against Chile. And you know, we had a good running game. Greg was a really good running back. He could make some really good cuts. You know, he read really well. He's very patient. And sometimes makes fullback look good, but he would get up there and do his thing. And then we went to New York the following week, and man, what a game that was. And Flip Anderson caught touchdown last play of the game, and then overtime and kept running. and then we would go to the NFC Championship game, of course, and against San Francisco. And like I said, we had already beat them in San Francisco, and they came back and beat us in L.A. in Anaheim that year. And we really look forward to the game, and you know, it's so surreal. I said that's the closest I ever got to the Super Bowl, and you know, you see before the game they had the champagne, they have plastic all over your lockers, they have those hats and those T-shirts, you know, and you're all excited, and you one game away, and anyway, they beat us, and you come back to the locker room, and guess what? There's no hats, no T-shirts. No champagne. That's on the other side. So I guess they put on those T-shirts because, you know, we didn't get a chance to go. But we never got any closer after that year. I mean, and right after that, John Robson, I think they got rid of him the following year. Yeah. The Chuck Knox took over for the Rams. And, of course, I left and went to Green Bay. And when I got there, once again, I got a chance to play with somebody that I knew about. I was much older, but we got Brett Favre. He's from Mississippi, like, you know, like me. I got a chance to see him develop. And then they had Sterling Sharp, who was, you know, really good. You know, when he hurt his neck, I think he would have been absolutely in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, and also on defense, I got a chance to play with Kevin Green in L.A. too. So, I mean, I played with some good, really good players. And that Green Bay team was up. I could see it in Brett that he was a gunslinger. So and we knew that team would go to win. After that year, I retired. It was my last year in 1992. So my body couldn't take anymore. But it was a fun time. It was a great time. Got a chance to meet a lot of people, play with some great people.
All right, now 1990. I mean, you'd been a player as a fullback who was always, I mean, kind of unsung. You were the unsung hero. One of Blake Bells, the Diggers, guys like that. But in 1990, you were named a recipient of the Daniel F. Reeves Memorial Award, which was an award the players and coaches voted on for your team.
Yes.
What did that mean to be the MVP of your team voted on by your peers?
Well, it meant a lot because to let you know that they really appreciate what you do. I mean, it's hard for people to understand is that, you know, the fun time for us was to play on Sundays, but it's really hard after every game. You have to make yourself get up and practice, you know. You have to practice and do your work and get in for the, you know, do scouting reports to for the next game, the next opponent. And to knowing that I wasn't as talented as Henry or Flipper, you know, and Everett and those guys, and it meant a lot when you get voted by your peers. And then not only that, I was that same year I got the Carl Eckert Award. He was a linebacker for us who with the Rams, he got killed. And they had an award named after him. So I got that award too. I was one of the Carl Eckert Awards at the same time. So I let you know that, you know, it's just, and if you practice hard and play hard and people see it, you don't have to be a rah rah person, but you can lead by examples and they see what you're trying to do and the effort you put in. Whatever they ask you to do, you do it. And that was great that my teammates felt that way about me. It was very, very fearsome now to think about it. They thought that much about me.
You mentioned your relationship with Coach Coryell. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with offensive coordinator Ernie Zampezi. And I know you mentioned him a little bit.
Oh, my God. Man. Zampezi, he saw me in my rookie year. I guess he trusted me, and he felt like I was smart enough to do anything he asked me to do. I mean, I could do it. I mean, whether it was block, go out and pass out. But, I was like, one time I was backup quarterback with the Chargers, and we did this little option play all the time. I think it's the Cleveland Gary or Gary Anderson. So he had all kind of wrinkles and stuff that he used me, my talents and stuff that he trusted me enough that I could do. And I feel like Sam, he was able. I was happy for him because he was able. Him and North Turner, those guys, they were able to. Hudson Howell and all those, they were able to go to Dallas and get them a Super Bowl ring. And, for as long as he had put in, the work he had put into the game, it was just unbelievable. And now, back when I was in San Diego, his son, Ken, was a high school guy. Now he's the offensive coordinator of Cincinnati. So, I called and talked with him probably a couple of months ago. And it's great to see he's still living, still doing good. When I first saw the guy, I was like, who's that guy back there smoking a cigarette with a towel on his head and had this little round head on his head, And it was like, that's the FC's offensive coordinator. So, and when you first get there, but the longer you're around him, you see how brilliant he was and how good he was with Dan Fouts. And, he came out here. Of course, he went to school at USC, so he was a defensive back coach with the Chargers at first. So he went from a defense coach to offensive coach. And really, I don't think it was a better mind ever been in the game than Sam Peasy. I mean, that's who North turned on his stuff from. So when we first got to Rams, North was at USC with Coach Lawson. All they knew was how to run the ball. So North learned from them. And all these people that broke off his son and all this different stuff that it's like playground. He made it like playground football, And it was a lot of fun. So he invaded a lot of stuff. It wasn't – he would try anything, and – he was really good at it. And the thing about it is that he drew the play up on during the week and he tell you exactly how it's gonna happen, certain plays, that you know it's gonna be a touchdown, and sure enough it was that way. But he was the mind behind that, those strong days and with the Chargers and of course with the Rams and later on with the Cowboys. So I mean I could truly say without him, I don't know, but I don't believe in me. I don't know if I would stay there 9 years. So he I will base my career to him. So I was with him 8 out of my 9 years. I should have stayed there until I went to Green Bay. I wish I could have stayed, but they had Robert Delfino who was coming on and, and was making big strides and with them and Marcus Dupree and all those guys. I'm telling you, I wish he would have stayed healthy and stayed in college. That's what I think would have been really, really good. And Marcus Dupree, he's a beast.
Yeah, definitely was. All you got to do is go and watch that Fiesta Bowl against Arizona State.
Absolutely. So, that's what I think during his high school career. When I was at Ole Miss, he was something special. And he was a good friend. I've talked to him a lot. So, the good thing about all this is that I'm friends with all these guys. I've talked to him. It's good to check on and talk to them now about those days. And I tell you what, the Rams are really excited because they're coming back to Los Angeles, and that's going to be a madhouse. So I think all the games are going to be really good this year there. And they deserve it. They've been waiting.
Hopefully they go back to the old colors too. So.
I think they're playing back in the Coliseum. I don't know if the Chargers are going to go with them or not. They're going to play one more year there, but I would hate to see the Chargers leave San Diego.
You talk about the Chargers, the situations there. I mean, what's your opinion of the NFL today, the concussion issue, all that stuff? I mean, do you still watch?
Well, I just got married last year. And
I say as soon as I was 53, I'm 55 now, so. I met this lovely lady. I'm married now, and I'll be married 2 years in March 8th. And the game has changed. For the better, the worse, I don't know. But I really believe that when we played, they had five helmets. I really believe in those five helmets. They had those big cubes, and they're real heavy, 5, 7 pounds, whatever. But I really believe in them. And eventually, Rodell, was a sponsor of the NFL, and it took over. But with the concussion, all that, it's real. And I had a lot of them when I played, That's why sometimes I can't remember things I'm supposed to remember, like the names and stuff. But other than that, health-wise,
you know, I have good days and bad days. But I would do it all over again. I mean, it was a great experience. I followed everything in football. I mean, football was a big point for me. Starting, you know, like in my little town of Mississippi, we integrated in 1969, you know, and being a black and white town, we were separated. But football, once we integrated, football kept us together, you know. Then I was able to go on to Ole Miss, you know, they had the rebel flag and kind of stuff and all that stuff, you know. But I went there to play football and get that education. I didn't go to the flag. I had a great time there. And so, you know, it's been a long road, and I've met a lot of good people. All your friends, I don't have anything bad to say. I mean, football's rewarded me a whole lot. It's given me my family opportunity to do a lot. You know, I got three older brothers. I have a son and a daughter, and it's given me opportunity that, you know, I couldn't have done anything else with it. So I'm very appreciative of football.
What else keeps you busy today?
What keeps me busy today? Basically, I wake up and I do a lot of walking. I like to walk. This is an opportunity to get out and think. And I do that. And we, me and my wife, she do puzzles. And I'm a granddad now. And I love my grandkids. You know, they come over and call me granddaddy, and I smile. And I love that. That's what I like doing now. I really am. I didn't know it would be so good. I was in the furniture business after football. Came to Dallas and got this company called Rooms to Go, and they all around the market, you know, and they've been around for a long time. They came to Dallas in 2000, and so I was able to work for them, and I transferred here to Houston. They transferred me here in 2008, but now today I'm retired. I'm just, you know, taking their time and enjoying life, and I decided, you know, I want to retire early. And 55 rather than 65 or 70. I want to kind of just sit back and enjoy life rather than be busy all the time. I'm a what they call a house dad, man. I got a son here. He's 19, and I cook, I clean, you know, I do what I got to do. I used to cook, but I don't cook as much as I used to. But just being dead, a house dad and a granddad, I'm loving it.
Hey, well, Buford, it was great having you on the show tonight.
Well, guys, thank you, you know, and hopefully, good luck to you guys, and hope you guys can get some more good people to taste some good old stories. But like I said, football has always been good to me, and the people around me have been good, and y'all keep doing a good job, Matt and Mike, and good luck to you.
All right.
Thanks a lot,
Buford.
It was great to have you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, I want to remind everybody, check out the Grueling Truth Facebook page. You can catch us on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher. We will have former Minnesota Viking running back Darren Nelson on Thursday night. Working on a few other guests for the next couple days also, so make sure you check those out. Matt, any final words?
Really enjoyed hearing his stories, hearing about his career with the Rams. It was a privilege to have him on and interview him tonight.
And make sure you check out the 1983 Egg Bowl on YouTube. The play.
Yeah,
definitely.
You have to, Matt. Everybody's got to check out the YouTube video on the 1983 Egg Bowl.
You will not believe what happened. You got to see that.
No, you will not believe. I mean, the ball goes right through the outside.
Right through it.
It's like a 40-mile-an-hour gust of wind that just blows it away.
It's crazy, but it happened. You gotta see it.
Yeah. It beats the hell out of that Flutie Hail Mary crap.
Well, that was a big catch, that Flutie thing. That was special, Flutie. I mean, he was a special player too, you know, for his side. He was awesome. He sure was. Well, guys, I'm gonna run and thank y'all. Okay, appreciate you.
All right,
thanks
a lot, Buford.
Okay, thank you. Bye bye.
Yep. Make sure you check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com also. So, Matt, check out the 83 Egg Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And make sure everybody else, I will actually send you that in a message just so you can watch that clip. It'll blow your mind. You'll have to watch it like 10 times to realize what actually happens to.
That sounds crazy.
So, for Matt Andrew Scavage, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.